What happens when someone has everything? Beauty, intelligence, wealth, social standing, yet lacks the one thing that matters most? Self-awareness? Emma Woodhouse enters the story at 21 with every advantage, ruling over her father's estate in the small village of Highbury. But here's the catch. She's never been challenged, never been corrected, never faced real consequences for her actions. Her mother died young, her governess adored rather than disciplined her, and her hypochondriac father depends on her completely. The result? A young woman who believes she possesses special insight into everyone's hearts and destinies, when in reality, she can barely see beyond her own assumptions. After her beloved governess marries, Emma takes credit for the match and declares herself a natural matchmaker. This single delusion, that she understands love better than those actually experiencing it, sets off a cascade of misunderstandings that will teach her humility the hard way. What makes Emma so compelling isn't that she's cruel or malicious, it's that her genuine intelligence and good intentions, twisted by inexperience and unchecked privilege, lead her to cause real harm to people she genuinely cares about. Emma's first project? Elevate Harriet Smith by securing her a proper marriage. When farmer Robert Martin proposes, a man who genuinely loves Harriet, Emma convinces her to refuse, blinded by snobbery. She has someone better in mind, Mr. Elton, the village vicar. What unfolds is painful to watch. Emma arranges portrait sessions and interprets every glance as confirmation, completely missing reality. When Mr. Elton admires Harriet's portrait, he's admiring the artist. The charade he writes isn't for Harriet, it's a declaration to Emma herself. The disaster peaks in a carriage ride when Mr. Elton, emboldened by wine, proposes to Emma. Her shocked refusal leads to mutual recriminations. He never considered Harriet suitable, while Emma is insulted he would aim above his station at her. The irony cuts deep. Emma believes Harriet deserves better than a farmer, but is offended when the vicar considers himself worthy of Emma. Her contradictory snobbery leaves both women wounded. Harriet, humiliated by false hopes, Emma confronting her first major failure. Highbury operates as a microscope on human behavior within a rigid social hierarchy. Emma and Mr. Knightley occupy the top tier, while the Weston have risen through military service and trade, the Eltons straddle an ambiguous middle, and Miss Bates, poor but genteel, navigates a precarious position. The hierarchy's power lies in its arbitrary nature and real consequences. When Emma insults Miss Bates at a party, Mr. Knightley delivers his harshest rebuke. How could you be so unfeeling to Miss Bates? This moment crystallizes everything. Social position confers responsibility, not license. True gentility lies in consideration for others, not assertion of status. Jane Fairfax's situation illuminates this further. Despite superior accomplishments, she faces becoming a governess, what she calls entering the slave trade. Through this village microcosm, we see how social structures both support and constrain, protecting the vulnerable while also trapping them. Emma's transformation unfolds through painful self-recognition. After Mr. Elton's proposal, she briefly acknowledges her inconsiderate, indelicate, irrational, unfeeling behavior toward Harriet, then deflects blame. Real growth begins at Box Hill, where her cruel joke at Miss Bates's expense drove Mr. Knightley's devastating rebuke. It was badly done, indeed. Her tearful carriage ride home marks a genuine turning point. Her morning visit to Miss Bates represents true atonement, not conscience soothing, but real amends, an act of humility signaling actual growth. Emma's deepest education comes through recognizing her feelings for Mr. Knightley. Believing he might marry Harriet, she realizes he's infinitely the most dear to her. This emotional awakening coincides with her moral one. She sees both her love and her responsibility for potentially separating them through meddling. Emma's final transformation involves accepting previously rejected limitations. She embraces marriage after declaring she never would, acknowledges needing guidance after priding herself on independence. These aren't surrenders, but maturation. Emma doesn't lose her spirit, but tempers it with self-knowledge and genuine consideration for others. Jane Austen employs free indirect discourse, blending third-person narration with Emma's thoughts to create both intimacy and critical distance. We experience Emma's perspective while gradually recognizing its unreliability. When Emma dismisses Jane Fairfax as having a coldness of manner which everybody must perceive, discerning readers spot projection rather than truth. Characters speak in codes governed by social convention. Mrs. Elton's declaration that "my friends are not of the ostentatious sort" actually boasts about their refinement. The most brilliant example occurs during word games at Box Hill, where surface pleasantries mask deeper tensions, and Emma's clever joke reveals her cruelty. Seemingly minor incidents, dinner parties, piano deliveries, carry significant narrative weight. The real story unfolds in spaces between actions, in moments of recognition that transform understanding. Every conversation operates on multiple levels, teaching us that meaning often hides beneath surface appearances. Emma must learn to see reality rather than impose imaginative constructions on others. When she claims to have made the match between Miss Taylor and Mr. Weston, Mr. Knightley deflates her. "You made a lucky guess, and that is all that can be said." Her fantasies about Mr. Elton's interest in Harriet, Frank Churchill's interest in herself, Harriet's suitability for genteel society repeatedly collide with reality, forcing greater perceptiveness. Jane Fairfax provides contrast. Where Emma indulges romantic fantasies, Jane faces harsh realities of poverty and limited options. Frank Churchill embodies the dangers of privileging appearance over reality. His charm appeals, but his deceptions reveal moral weakness. The Box Hill episode crystallizes everything. Emma's wit triumphs over her perception of Miss Bates's genuine vulnerability, and Mr. Knightley's rebuke forces her to see beyond clever construction to real pain. Emma's ultimate triumph comes when she perceives her own heart clearly. It darted through her with the speed of an arrow that Mr. Knightley must marry no one but herself. This self-awareness aligns fantasy with reality, leading to genuine happiness. More than two centuries later, this novel captivates because it speaks to fundamental human experiences. Emma's journey from self-deception to self-knowledge represents a universal coming-of-age process. Though few possess her privileges, many recognize her struggle to reconcile self-perception with reality. In our age of curated social media, Emma's preoccupation with appearances feels surprisingly modern. Highbury's complex web represents human community in microcosm. We recognize both the constraints, gossip, judgment, lack of privacy, and essential supports, care for vulnerable members, shared celebrations, collective memory. Emma endures because she remains compellingly human, neither heroine nor villain, but something more interesting. She's a fundamentally good person whose flaws cause real harm, combining privilege and blindness, generosity and selfishness, intelligence and foolishness. Jane Austen called Emma a heroine whom no one but myself will much like, yet generations have proven her wrong. We like Emma precisely because of her imperfections, because she demonstrates that moral growth is possible without complete transformation. Emma offers something valuable, the hope that we can learn to be better while remaining essentially ourselves, that wisdom and kindness can be cultivated without losing our fundamental spirit.